Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello. Welcome, welcome. It's news to me time. It is October 28th. That means it's Wednesday. And this show's coming at you live. Appreciate it. Sorry we started a little slow. I got an alert. Hey, you can update your Ubuntu to 2010. It's like, oh, perfect. Go ahead. And so I didn't prep the computer. I thought, okay, it's going to need to restart, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, no, it got hung up. It freaked out at a certain stage. So I was messing with that. But let's do this. Ah, what do you know? SDF's VPS as Ubuntu 20.10. Let's jump into, we've got, you know, we have news, like always. It's always a good time. But I did have other news, or I have Marcus news, I guess. And that is, I got Dahong Pao today. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. So, let's talk about news. We've got just a few stories. I'm trying to trim them down so that we don't keep running out of time. So, hopefully, we'll fit them all in. Of course, the way we always start is the way we'll always start. And that's with the world.
World news.
So, first up, we've got some news out of Africa that I thought was pretty interesting. Let me make sure I word this the right way. Resize the window. All right. Yeah, there we go. That's the right order. Order is important for this story. So basically, what happened was the World Trade Organization's bid to select a new leader was plunged in uncertainty today after the U.S. rejected the Nigerian woman proposed as a global watchdog's next director general. That's right, three World Trade Organization ambassadors charged with finding its successor to Brazilian Roberto Azevedo had decided that Nigerian former finance minister Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, I'll put that in calm because that's a hard name for me to say, should be the next chief as she had secured a wide cross-regional backing. The news confirmed what trade sources earlier told Reuters. Their decision, which awaits approval from WTO members, caps a more than 4-month selection process involving intensive lobbying, which saw her square up against South Korean Trade Minister Yoo Myung-hee in the final round. The head of the Troika of Ambassadors relayed their recommendation to WTO members at a meeting on Wednesday. However, the U.S. then said they did not back Okonjo-Iweala. The decision needs to be approved by consensus, meaning any WTO member could block her appointment. One delegation could not support the candidacy of Dr. Ngozi and said they would continue to support South Korean Minister Yoo. I had a different take on this nomination, but I must have not bookmarked it. Sorry about that. But yeah, so we'll see what happens. This is a big political move. So we'll see how that goes. The U.S. right now is pretty disastrous with anything that comes internationally. She would be the first woman to head the WTO and the first person from Africa to head the WTO. So both of those things would be really great. Africa's standing in the world. You know, it'd be nice to have them back, you know, in the global economy more prominently. All right. Well, let's jump over to Belgium. Oh, yeah. Belgium's a popular place to talk about. But this is coming to us from the AP. Small yet so divided. Belgium has been hit hard again by the pandemic and now presents some of the most worrying statistics in the continent, reeling under a coronavirus resurgence. If there ever was a common enemy for the rival Dutch and French-speaking citizens and regions to fight, this would surely be it. But even now, cooperation goes against the grain in Belgium to the extent that the country's Roman Catholic bishops issued a call for all in the name of the Lord to show some unity. We can win the battle against the coronavirus only if we do it together, the bishop said in a joint letter ahead of Sunday's All Saints' Day, highlighting the different rules imposed by the country's national and three regional governments, which are responsible for an area 300 kilometers at its widest reach. Nobody knows math in Belgium. from.com. Speaking of, since it's live, you can come and hang out in Calm, chat with everybody. Calm is the way that we chat at SDF and on radio. All you got to do is SSH over to SDF, type COM at the prompt, hit enter, and then you press G for go to and type Anon Radio, all lowercase, all one word, hit enter, and you'll be in the Anon Radio room and you can hang out. Big shout outs today. We got SMJ, probably enjoying a sandwich, Ratsu, X1, Jazzmaz is probably hanging out as well. I do want to also mention a little bit of programming note. Of course, the Dubious Goals Committee is always every day at 1930 UTC, but later tonight, if you're in the U.S., or early tomorrow, is the Vintage Comp. It's on when Open VoIP usually is, so at 0200 on Thursdays, and it's a really fun show, so you should check that out. But after the Dubious Goals Committee, you do have DJ Zep, so check that out. So that'll be a fun one, and you can kind of hang out basically from now until 2200 or 2300 listening to us or listening to people on and on radio. So it's pretty fun. The Vintage Comp is going to be part 3 with Niall Steiner, so check it out if you got the time, if you got the gumption. Let's jump back into the world news. Sorry, just wanted to be sure everyone knows how to get into the conversation. Sometimes during the show, I'll talk at people in comm, and it's, unless you're in there, it's kind of confusing. And if it's not October 28th, it might be confusing. All right. So Belgium is divided, having trouble deciding what to do. On Wednesday, the top two reversed roles again. What? Oh. This week, news struck that the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control had recorded Belgium, shoehorned in between Germany, France, and the Netherlands, as having the highest 14-day cumulative number of COVID-19 cases per 100,000, just surpassing the Czech Republic. On Wednesday, the two reversed roles again, with the Czechs standing at 1448.7 compared to Belgium's 1424.2. In a standings nobody wants to lead, both far outstrip even hotbeds like France or Spain. In all, Belgium 11,038 people have died so far in the pandemic. So it's very sad news. And there's basically the article just goes on and on about the stuff we've talked about, the European pandemic crisis, or the outbreak, second wave. Speaking of, to kind of get away from the pain of coronavirus, let's talk about something else. Belarusian students are complaining of expulsions after joining an opposition strike. That's right, dozens of Belarusian students said on Wednesday they'd been expelled from university after joining a nationwide strike aimed at forcing veteran leader Alexander Lukashenko to step down. Students, factory workers, and pensioners have taken to the streets since Monday, part of a protest action called for by exiled opposition figure Svetlana Tsikhanoukskaya. Sorry for butchering these names. She has accused him of rigging an August presidential election, which she says she won, and demanded he step aside and allow new elections to be held. Lukashenko has insisted his election victory was legitimate and used force to crack down on protesters. Read more at Reuters there. Now, something that's kind of unusual, it's very rare in the United States, but this comes to us, I think, from the UK. Basically, the husband of a nurse killed by her policeman lover has said he is disappointed with the verdict after the killer was sentenced to 10.5 years in jail for manslaughter, having previously been cleared of her murder. Timothy Bremer, 41, killed Claire Perry, also 41, a married nurse and a mother of two, after she sent a text message from his phone to his wife saying, "I am cheating on you." Perry, from Bournemouth, died from brain injury after severe neck compression during what was described in court as a kerfuffle in Bremer's car. The two had met in a car park off the Horns and Inn in West Parley, Dorset, on 9th of May, where she confronted him about another of his extramarital affairs, the court heard. So, very sad news that this one's dead, but it's good that he's behind bars. Of course, I've got a U.S. story with the outcomes not quite the same. France 24 has a nice, well, it has another disappointing story, because this is sad news to me. We know there's no happiness. Joy! It's a pandemic, baby. Nothing's good's happening. Thailand's first transgender member of parliament has been dismissed. Thailand's parliament lost its first transgender MP Wednesday after the constitutional court revoked her seat in what critics call a political move against supporters of the kingdom's pro-democracy movement. Thanwarin Sukhapist, a former actor and filmmaker, was a pioneer of the LGBT community when she won a seat at last year's election for the Future Forward Party. But the party was dissolved in February this year, a move that escalated discontent and fueled pro-democracy activists to demand the government step down. Dozens of its MPs, including Thanwarin, joined another party, the Move Forward Party, but a judge ruled Wednesday that as a stockholder of a media company, she had breached electoral law and must leave her parliamentary seat. I'm not surprised I expected this to happen, adding she did not think the decision was related to her gender identity. I will continue my work fighting for better outcomes for the LGBT community. This is very interesting. It's sad news, but at least it was for something like owning stock in a company and having a conflict of interest. It wasn't some kind of bigotry. Maybe it is. It's hard to say. Alrighty. Let's jump over here. The BBC has something. A police officer, this is something that I didn't realize was legal, and some people think is animal, or it's often considered animal cruelty, but there are still cockfights going on in the world, and in the Philippines, they're legal during certain times of year and certain days, and a Philippine police officer has been killed by a rooster during a raid on an illegal cockfight in the province of Northern Samar. Lieutenant Christine Bullock was struck by the rooster's gaff, which is a razor-sharp steel blade that's attached to the legs of the fighting roosters. The blade cut his left thigh, slicing his femoral artery. He was rushed to the hospital and declared dead on arrival. Cockfighting's been banned during the virus outbreak. Before the pandemic, it was only allowed in licensed cockpits on Sundays and legal holidays. So, this is pretty amazing right here. The accident was unfortunate, calling it a piece of bad luck that he can't explain. This is first time in 25 years as a policeman that I lost a man to a fighting cock spur, said the police chief. The police chief also sent his deepest sympathy to the victim's family. Three people were arrested and seven fighting roosters, two sets of gaff, and 550 Philippine pesos were confiscated. And 550 Philippine pesos is about $11 US or £8. Three other suspects remained at large. Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, he basically just bled out. Even though there was an ambulance to take him to the hospital right away, still toast. Really sad. All right, we got two more stories real quick, and then we'll see what else is going on.
I want to hear the music.
Yeah, that's going to happen too.
I want to hear the music.
Yes. We're gonna hear some music in a minute. First, couple quick headlines. COVID, Melbourne's hard-won success after a marathon lockdown. So in early July, the nights were long and dark, and Australia's cultural capital was confronting the terrifying reality of another deadly wave of infections. More than 110 days later, experts say it's emerging as a world leader in disease suppression, alongside places including Singapore, Vietnam, South Korea, and New Zealand and Hong Kong. Raina McIntyre, a biosecurity professor at the University of New South Wales, Kirby Institute, told the BBC that Australia's response had been light years ahead of the US and UK. It's just thoroughly shocking when we think of pandemics, we don't think that well-resourced, high-income countries are going to fall apart at the seams. But that's exactly what we've seen, she said. At the end of Tuesday, Melbourne's 5 million residents will see an end to the strict stay-home orders that put an entire city into a type of protective custody. When the restrictions are lifted, Melburnians will have endured one of the world's longest and toughest lockdowns. And then it does have a chart, and the drop-off is incredible. So good luck. Glad you guys are safe. And just to end on a note that's not COVID, Hungary and Poland are countering critics with the Rule of Law Institute. So Hungary and Poland plan to step up their own Rule of Law Institute to hit back against criticism of declining democratic norms in the two countries as point out flaws in the system of their critics. comes at a time when many in the EU would like harsher penalties for countries that flout the bloc's rule of law standards, and debate is underway about whether to link the next 7-year budget to a rule of law mechanism that would deny some funds to those in breach. Both Hungary and Poland have been accused to varying degrees of infringements on judicial independence, erosion of democratic norms, and attacks on media freedom. "We need to show to Europe that there might be an alternative interpretation," said Hungary's Justice Minister, Judit Varga, in an interview with The Guardian. She said, "Hungary and Poland hope to bring other countries in the region into the initiative." So this will be interesting. As we all know, Poland's widely against most women's reproductive rights, abortion, access to birth control, all that kind of stuff. And Hungary's kind of in the same boat. But they're both in the EU, so we'll see what happens. You can check out The Guardian if you want to know more. Of course, yeah, now
I want to hear the
we're
music.
We're going to feed that music demon that keeps cropping up, popping up in my head. I want to hear the music. Yeah. You know, we all want to hear the music, but that's kind of what happens, you know? You get, you got to search the music library, not just your playlist, Marcus. But anyway, let's go ahead here. Here we go. I got it. There's an Amnesty International CD called Instant Karma, and I like a lot of the songs on it. So let's see, who do we want to hear? Sorry, dead air, because I started thinking about music. I want to hear it, thinking about it. Anyway, this is the Black Eyed Peas, Power to the People. I don't remember this song. Let's see what it sounds like.
Oh, You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Whoops-a-doodle. We're talking in comm, and I missed my cue. Sorry about that. Anyway, you are listening to Anon Radio, and we've got about 9 minutes, a little over 8 minutes and some change, before it's time for the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, a golf ball-obsessed, wonderful person here on Anon Radio. Shows every day at 19:30 UTC, so definitely check it out. So let's do some domestic news. There's so many stories. I want to do a couple that are kind of funny, or at least made me laugh. First up, from The Guardian, how a live-streamed $375,000 deal for Pokemon cards ended in disaster. It had been billed as a record-breaking deal that would make serious investors covet 20-year-old trading cards featuring pictures of cartoon monsters. Pocket monsters, if you will. Instead, a $375,000, 287,000-pound deal transaction ended in disaster on Tuesday when the buyer opened a sealed box that was supposed to be full of rare first-edition Pokemon cards live on YouTube and found that the contents had been faked. Confused, so was Chris Camillo, a social arbitrage investor and one of the hosts of a YouTube channel called Dumb Money. He said he decided on the deal after watching the market on the Pokemon trading card game Rocket in the last year. They had, continuing on and jumping the story, they had said to be paid in cash, Camillo said, and so a silver briefcase full of $100 bills sat on the table in front of the group during a live YouTube broadcast. The idea was to check on the contents, hand over the money, and sell the cards next year to benefit charity. But a mood of anticipation as the box was opened quickly turned to bewilderment. At some point, the hoped-for rarities had been removed and replaced with filler sets that were commonplace, damaged, or otherwise worthless. So, pretty bad. But if you go to The Guardian, you can check out a video where they're doing that, where they open it up. And, of course, if you do read it, don't worry. There is a correction. The article was amended today to correct the spelling of Bulbasaur. So I thought that was good. That put a little smile on my face. Speaking of smiles, this one is just downright poor planning is kind of the hallmark of President Trump now. But this one really took the cake. So this is coming to us from CNN, which I normally don't read. But anyway, when President Donald Trump left Omaha on Tuesday, thousands watched and cheered in the frigid air as Air Force One took off right into the night sky. But for the loyal supporters, their experience at the Trump rally was far from over. For the next several hours, hundreds and hundreds of people who attended the rally were stranded as a chaotic scene unfolded on dark roads on a remote stretch near the Omaha airport. They waited for buses that didn't arrive, unable to reach the site because of a clogged two-lane road. Many people started walking to their car, parked 3 or 4 miles away, which blocked the roads even further. Several medics were seen by CNN giving attention to people in the bone-chilling evening air. The temperature was right at freezing, but wind chills were far lower. Earlier in the night, the president commented on the weather. "I mean, I'm standing here freezing. I ask you one little favor. Get the hell out and vote," Trump said to cheers in the crowd. "The great red wave. At least you're down there with each other. I'm up here. I'm all up here, and the wind is blowing." After the rally, police officers tried to control the scene but struggled to bring order to the pandemonium. There are no campaign advance teams in sight. One local advance volunteer said they were given no instructions how to get supporters back onto the buses. The Trump campaign said Wednesday they deployed double the number of buses to rallygoers, but local road closures and resulting congestion caused delay. So, pretty much, what happened is Trump has rallies in these smaller areas or small airports, and so then they have to provide parking off-site and then bus people in. But they had the buses to bring the people to the rally, but they didn't have the people to bring the buses. They didn't have the buses to bring the people back. So it's pretty wild. It's sad. So a few people went to the hospital. You know, a lot of older people, they couldn't handle the freezing weather. But it is in Nebraska, and some people I know in the SDF universe are out there too. So it made me, I caught my eye, made me laugh. Let's talk about some more serious news. We've got a whole 3 minutes and some change to go. So let's go. First up, The U.S. accuses 8 an alleged plot to harass and intimidate citizens to return to China. 8 people have been charged with conspiring to work on China's behalf in a plot involving threatening letters and the use of night vision goggles to surveil and coerce a Chinese family to return to their home country to face charges, according to a U.S. criminal complaint unsealed on Wednesday. 5 of the individuals charged, including an American private investigator hired to help spy on the family, were arrested on Wednesday in New Jersey, New York, and California, while the rest are believed to be in China, top Justice Department officials said in a news conference. The alleged plot, known as Operation Fox Hunt and Operation Skynet, court records show, and it took place between 2016 and 2019. Its goal was to target Chinese nationals living in foreign countries and intimidate them into returning to China to face charges. The U.S. doesn't have an extradition treaty with China. However, the U.S. does require by law that anyone who is acting on a foreign country's behalf must register and notify the Attorney General's office. So, very, very interesting. Hey, Skynet is in use all around the world. Different versions, I'm sure. So that's kind of the story. It is very much ties in with a story we read about probably months ago now that was talking about the increase in activity in the U.S. by a Chinese government trying to coerce people, you know, its citizens who'd fled the country into returning to face charges. So kind of fits in, but that's now, you know, somebody applying. This was kind of funny. I almost put it in as a tech news story. Mark Zuckerberg couldn't get his Zoom to connect for the remote Senate hearing. We talked about yesterday that a bunch of tech bros, or the main big three, Facebook, Twitter, and somebody else, they're all hauled up into Washington to talk about. Here it is: a U.S. City Senate Commerce Committee hearing on a key social media legal protections was briefly delayed when Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg struggled to appear remotely. "We're unable to make contact with Mr. Mark Zuckerberg," Senator Roger Wicker, who chairs the committee, said, agreeing to a 5-minute delay. Facebook told the committee that Zuckerberg was alone. He was able to get connected in a couple minutes. "I was able to hear the opening statements. I was just having a hard time connecting myself," Zuckerberg said. Wicker responded, "I know that feeling." And it was just kind of cool because it's even though he's an evil corporate war overlord, you know, he's still a person who struggles with his Zoom sometimes. Hey, what do you know? We're out of time. There's a few other sad stories.
I'll
post them on Mastodon.
Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Oh yeah! Dubious Goals Committee! Gotta chat. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Sorry, I've got about 10 seconds and I'm done. And so I'm just gonna... Boop, 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 boop.
Don't want to hear the music.
Already.
Seven.